Well, hello, my friends. It's good to be here tonight. We've got a lot of stories to talk about, and they're all good ones. And we are saving the best one for last, the most important one. And I hope you all catch the sarcasm in my voice, but it's going to be a fun one. Clay, you want to say hi before we go to our little theme song?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Another week back. Lots going on in the world. And love being here to talk about it with Elsa and all of you. So let's roll it.
Oh boy! So we're gonna start right in on the heavy stuff. We're gonna hit you over the head with it, and then we'll ease our way into some lighter stuff. But we would be very remiss to not talk about this. Three American service members were killed in an attack on the Jordan-Syria border. Clay, you're gonna do most of the bullet points on this one, but I do have like some questions, I don't know, some framework here, and then you can kind of fill in all the blanks if you're cool with that. Yep. They were killed in a drone attack on base in Jordan. And so here's one of the things I want to talk about that I just read. Biden blamed radical Iran-backed militant groups operating in Syria and Iraq. I did notice, and I want you to see if I'm just nitpicking here. I did notice he did not call out any specific group. And I'm curious why he didn't pinpoint exactly who. Any thoughts on that? We can kind of go down.
I haven't seen a specific group claim responsibility, which may be why he didn't name anybody, but they are based on the technology, and I'm sure there's some intelligence gathering going on out there, and somebody's probably got some intel from this that says it's an Iranian backed group, specifically IRGC, which we talked about last week. You know, we talked about all of the Hamas, Houthis, Hezbollah, you know, that the terrorist groups that are all being backed by Iran within the region. This is more of the same. So it's probably, I know that nobody's claimed it. So nobody said, yeah, it was us, which again is probably why the president didn't put a name on it, or anybody else for that matter. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they know, based on the technology, specifically because it is a drone attack, they probably have linked it somehow to Iran. That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious if that was cowardice on his part or just simply not knowing. Okay. Fair enough. The next thing I want to do is I want to make sure we give them some proper acknowledgement here. The three service members were Sergeant William Jerome Rivers, Specialist Kennedy Layden, and I apologize if I pronounce that wrong, Sanders, and Specialist Brianna Alexandria Moffitt. Our condolences to their families and their everyone just related to them and involved with them, because that is just a devastating loss, and it's awful every single time.
Yeah. So these were three Georgia National Guard members from a construction engineer company. So, like you said, I think this base is called Tower 22. It is on the border, Jordanian side of the Syria border. And being members of a construction battalion, you know, they were there for any number of reasons, probably for construction purposes. They were probably there to increase or maintain the infrastructure on that base, probably to support Americans. And there was a drone attack. Now, I haven't heard specifically what the technique for the drone was. I don't know if it was a munition launched off of the drone or if the drone itself was, you know, a munition. In other words, a kamikaze style attack. Not positive on that. But it was three killed. Unfortunately, the three that you showed, those members, those guard members killed in action. And then another, I think 34 was the last number that I saw wounded. 34, I think somewhere between 12 and 25 were actually evacuated to a higher level care facility to be evaluated. And then I think almost all of those have already returned to duty. They were almost all evaluated for TBI, traumatic brain injury type injury. So concussion, you know, syndrome, concussion protocols is essentially what's being, you know, being abided to, which is great, because for years and years and years, we would have totally ignored that as somebody who sustained a number of concussions, both in and out of the Army. Almost every one of them ignored completely or just kind of by me. I mean, you know, it was much culture as it was my stupidity. But now we do better. Thankfully, we do better as an Army, as an organization, to take care of our folks and to talk about those things and get them looked at, treated, and then taken care of as needed. So I didn't hear of any other critical injuries, but, you know, reports are a little bit sketchy. But that is, you know, that was just this week. And of course, you've got all of the responses, right?
Right.
You know, the war hawks are out. And it's everybody from, you know, it's all the normal players. It's, you know, Dan Crenshaw, and it's all of the folks of that ilk. Some have really more, Lindsey Graham's another one, you know, that some have, I think, a little bit better position to speak. And some, I think, are just in the, you know, we've got to respond type mentality. But they're out there and they're talking about escalation and they're talking about all kinds of things. So, it's the expectation from that crowd that we're always going to get. It's always escalate. It's always return fire. It's always, you know, hit them hard. And I think there's a danger in that. We talked about it last week that this can spin out of control very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be any retribution. I said that last week. But this is not a, in my opinion, this is not a fly into Iran or invade Iran type of scenario. It is the deadliest day since the evacuation of Kabul, since the gate. This is the most lost, you know, in the last, you know, 2 years since that happened. So,
right. And now because this was an attack on American soldiers, it goes probably without saying that they knew exactly who they were attacking. Right. Oh, I mean, sure. Is that a safe? Yeah. So that to me sounds like a very deliberate antagonistic move to get, which I think is insanely bold of them. I mean, I guess their level of confidence is pretty high to do such a bold attack. Is that, you think, because of this administration, because the weakness, or I'll even be generous and say perceived weakness of this administration? And I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think that kind of attack would have happened under Trump or a different administration?
So I'll put a little bit different spin on it. That is the 159th attack on U.S. troops since October 7th. Since Hamas and Israel kicked off.
Say that again. 159
attacks on U.S. troops in the region just since October 7th. Wow. So while this attack has been, on their terms, the most successful, 3 killed, 34 or so wounded, this is far from the first time that anybody's attempted this. This has been going on for months and in high numbers. I mean, you can do the math. It's been, you know, 120 days. You're over an attack a day, right?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where we're sitting. Okay. So, you know, this one, they got lucky. You know, they did hit, you know, Tower 22, the base, and unfortunately three killed in action and 34 wounded. So successful from, you know, the Iranian-backed terrorist side, but not the first attempt. So you know, that puts a different spin on this in the sense that this is not new news. This has been going on because of this administration for the last 120 days minimum, right? It's been going on since before that, but just in that window 159 times. So no, there is no fear. And every time there is one of these, it does embolden them. Every time there's an attack of some sort, it does embolden them and it gives them more courage. And it says, you know, well, they're not going to do anything to us, so keep going. Mm-hmm. So 159 times. And for once they got lucky from their perspective or finally hit a target. Sure. They're going to keep going. And it is because the response has not been significant enough. And I know there's a balance there. Again, I'm not a war hawk. I'm far from it. I live that life and I don't wish that on anybody. But, you know, in this case, there's got to be a little bit more retribution than there has been. We just have to find out what level that's at. But to answer
your other question, gonna be my question to you, really, like at this point, you know, now the escalation and now I'm hearing from, I'm sure other people already know this, I'm not one of those people, 159 attacks since October, that, you know, it is getting bolder and bolder. And it's hard not to imagine that logic would be that there needs to be a swift and violent retaliation response. I mean, I don't know how there's any way around that at this point. I mean, do you see another way around it? I know, like you said, you're you know, not a big fan of that for very logical reasons, understandable reasons. Is there a way to resolve this or stop this? You're not going to resolve it, but stop these attacks without going to that degree?
So I think what this is going to end up, the response to this is going to be a precision strike of some sort, or it's a Tomahawk cruise missile, or if it's something off of a drone, or even something off of a, you know, we used to refer to it as an air breathing platform, something with a pilot. I think what you're going to see is a precision strike on a very important target. It's not going to be widespread. It's not going to be spread all over Iran or all over the region. But we will find a very specific high-value target, and there will be a precision strike made. Whether it's a person, whether it's an installation, a facility, a capability, there will be something of high value that will get struck within the next probably 72 hours, or as soon as something of that level of value presents itself, we will respond. And it's not just going to be an underground munition storage facility for the Houthis, or it's not going to be, you know, a missile battery emplacement or something like that. It's going to be more significant. It may be a person, it may be a high level leader, or it may be a high level facility that we decide to strike. That's my guess. This isn't going to be a run of the mill response kind of thing. This is going to be a little bit more than that.
Yeah, he's backed into a corner now, right? I mean, this is extremely high profile. They've even had to address it. Although I will say at the time of our conversation right now, I am of the understanding, which I find horrendous, that the Biden specifically has not reached out to the families of these three Americans. And if that is in fact true, and I'm not saying that is 100% true, at this moment, it was true up until a couple few hours ago. That he has not reached out personally to these families, I think is absolutely disgusting. And I hope to be wrong on that, but I don't know if I am. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
I have not, but just as an example of that exact trend is that I think it was Sunday morning, the White House spokesperson, St. Pierre, she went on, I think it was MSNBC, their Sunday morning show. She was standing outside the White House. Now, she had to know in the wake of that attack that a question would be asked of her. Right. What's the president's response? What's the U.S. going to do? How is the president? Something along those lines. You knew it was going to come up. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen the clip, if you haven't seen it, find it, everybody. But if you haven't seen it, she was 100% ill-prepared.
Right.
Didn't care to know, couldn't speak clear, worse than normal. Right. I mean, she's not Kamala word salad. She's got her own version of that. But, you know, referred to them as folks, these folks that got killed, couldn't name, you know, who they were, what they did, where they were from, anything. It was terrible.
Even just her tone, her actual literal tone of voice sounded almost bored, like she was stifling a yawn, like, you know, well, oh, well, this is very tragic, of course, and sad. And, you know, it was like, wow. You know, the level of disrespect and disregard is absolutely obscene. And I did catch that. It was bad.
Yeah. And the big faux pas in there, which I don't even think was a Freudian slip. I think it was just an honest mistake, but it looks really bad. Was she said that they were, you know, protecting this administration. What those soldiers were doing when they were killed. They were protecting this administration or this nation. She corrected herself nation, something to that effect, but said that they were protecting the administration. And again, I think it was an accident, but it sounds even worse because again, it's more evidence. She was unprepared. There was no prepared statement, no rehearsal, no nothing. Didn't care enough to even worry about it. Very, very sad. Shameful.
Yeah, that she's hung on this long is absolutely stunning to me. And I feel like she's like shackled to that podium. Like they won't let her leave. Like I just imagine these behind the scenes and she's begging that. I just want to go home. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired. I've had enough. I can't do it. And they're like, no, you're staying. You got to do it.
I don't know if they can get anyone else to take the job.
I can't imagine. Right now? Right. Who would do it? Who would do it? Who would step up to that plate and take those hits? I can't even imagine it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a relationship of no other choices really right now between either one of them, I guess, because, well, I don't know. The left is crazy. They'll take her. She'll get her own talk show or a slot on, you know, one of their.
Jen Psaki got it.
She did. And she was pretty awful, too. You know, she was bad. She was really bad. I actually miss her because she was pretty easy for me to make fun of and mimic and do hers. I don't think I've done any Koreans in my impersonations. I don't even think I've attempted. I would just have to sit there and stammer and say I'm not going to answer that. That's all done.
And circle back.
And circle back.
Not answer it or circle back. Those are the two things. That's our go-to.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Oh gosh. Hey,
shifting gears from international to domestic.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Texas.
What are we talking about? We're talking about Texas. God bless Texas. I love me some Texas. So this is wild stuff. I mean, this is, you know, I don't mean to joke around about it. It's a big deal. It's pretty crazy what's going on there. I'm sure you all know at this point, unless you've spared yourself from all distressing news and goings on in the world, you know that there is a pretty big battle between the state of Texas, Governor Abbott, and the federal government. And the Supreme Court weighed in, and we have a lot of people that are very disappointed and upset and a little bit stunned by their ruling. And this is really, really wild stuff. And Abbott has doubled down. And what are we at? 26 states, I think, have expressed their support and allegiance, really, with Texas, with Governor Abbott, and offering aid and support. And right now, the conversation is about, and check me on this, please, federalizing the National Guard. That's what the Biden administration is looking at doing right now, correct?
Correct. So I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and the big thing is, you know, the National Guard belongs to the governor, right? That is the Texas National Guard belongs to Governor Abbott until or unless they are federalized by the president. Mm-hmm. Now, when that happens, what they have to do is put them on active duty, and then they have to pay them. Okay. The federal government has to fund everything that they do. Right. So if they federalize, and I'd have to look at the numbers, but Texas has got a pretty big National Guard. So if they federalize the entire Texas National Guard, they have to pay them active duty wages until they take them off of federal status. So they would have to activate them all and then pay for them all. Oh, by the way, just like everything else, they're not paying for it. You and I are paying for it, right?
Right.
Tax dollars at work. Now, what you also have is the other 26 states, like you mentioned, which is the number that I have, they have offered their own National Guard to assist Texas in many, many cases. So what's the president going to do? Is he going to federalize everybody's National Guard? Can they afford to do that? No, they can't.
No way. No way. Right.
So, you know, they can. Governors can do what they want with their National Guard, largely. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, Christy Noem, God love her, said she would load barbed wire in the back of her pickup truck herself and drive it down to Texas.
I already liked her, but she grows on me more and more every day. Yeah.
So say, you know, from South Dakota, she activates the National Guard from South Dakota and says, go down to Texas, and then puts them under command of the state of Texas. Now, think in terms of natural disasters. This has happened a million times before, right? National Guard. So there's a hurricane that rolls through Louisiana. Most of the Louisiana National Guard is trying to save their own house, right? Mm-hmm. So you get National Guard from other places, surrounding states, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Arkansas, that kind of stuff. They get activated and they go help in Louisiana, and they're put under command of whatever, you know, authority the state has established, if it's not already federal. So she can, and any other governor can, activate their National Guard and give them to Texas. They can do it anytime they want. Now, they have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. The state pays for it until they're federalized. But, you know, in a lot of cases, there's some, you know, agreements made between the states that, hey, we'll pay for half, or we'll pay for whatever, you know, kind of thing. We'll put them up, we'll pay for housing, and we'll feed them while they're down here, and that kind of deal. So right. The president can't withstand this if that's what happens. He can't do it.
He's got to be so furious right now.
Oh, yeah.
So furious because he's once again backed into a corner. I mean, what are you really going to do? And you know, unless you want a civil war here, I mean, you're talking, we just said 26 states. We are close to being split in half there. And everyone has pretty much said who's going to step up and say where they stand on this matter. And I think they've all been pretty clear about the lengths, like you said, Kristi Noem, the lengths that they will go to show that support. So you want to be that president? You want that in your, I mean, I don't know how much he actually cares. He's going to be, you know, gone before you know it. Sorry, that's probably a terrible thing to say, but, you know, let's be realistic. But I mean, is this the legacy that you want to have, that you were the catalyst for a civil war? So it's pretty Governor wild. Abbott, and, you know,
Governor Abbott has actually used the word secession in public. And, you know, Texas, if you've ever spent any time in Texas, you know, Texas does still consider itself its own country for the most part.
Yes.
But he has used that word secession, seceding from the Union, in public at least once in the last week and a half. So yeah, there's a lot going on there. There's also, it's almost like a counter to the migrant formations moving into Texas from Mexico. There are hundreds of volunteers coming to Texas from other states, people volunteering to work for the state of Texas to help secure the border. There's open opportunities. I think they're even offering to pay people's per diem, put them up, feed them $55 a day, something like that I've seen, to go down there and help secure the border. And they're really looking for former law enforcement, former military, anybody who's willing to help out. So you've got these caravans that are moving to Texas from the north, as opposed to the ones coming up from Mexico full of migrants. So it's very interesting, and it's going to come to a head, and it's going to come quickly.
Yeah. And you're talking about, or we're talking about, really in this very specific moment and space where this is happening, it's a relatively small area. You know, of course, the entire border, this is a whole issue, but the area is Eagle Pass, I believe, where they're all kind of converging. I think a population of like 30,000 or something like that. And which is, you know, it's a good size, certainly, but they are, you know, all of their hotels, everything is booked up right now. There is no space. They have tent cities for, you know, I think maybe Coast Guard, and or maybe that might have been the federal agents that are setting up in the tent cities. So, I mean, this whole area is where this is all converging on and happening in, and it's pretty wild to see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this continues to grow and shift and change in the next few weeks. I can tell you, Governor Abbott doesn't care. He is not going to back down. He basically said, he didn't say, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. But he also said, you know, essentially they can cut all the wire they want. We're just going to put more up. You know, he is very much on the side of his constituency and what he believes to be right on behalf of the Union, on behalf of the Republic, not just the state of Texas. So, the growth and change in this in the next coming weeks is going to be very interesting to watch. Grab your
popcorn. Absolutely. And to his credit, you know, I mean, he's not some, you know, rogue, you know, what do they call that? 10-gallon hat wearing, shooting pistols. You know, he's an extremely smart man. He knows the Constitution. He knows the rules. He knows what he can and cannot do. And you know, he's playing by the rules. He really is. So, and I'm sure that's arguable for some people who disagree with what he's doing. But yeah, it's going to be pretty wild. More wildness. We can move on to our next one because this one is going to be an ongoing. So we'll be talking about that one plenty more times, I think. Next up, let's talk about Trump. we have to talk about Trump because he's always in the news. And this is for all his lawsuits. And the latest, of course, is with E. Jean Carroll. And this is kind of like a repeat, essentially, this one, just a different set of circumstances, basically. So she sued him now. The latest one is for defamation and something else. I think there's something else that she sued him for, but defamation. This whole thing is so wild and so insane. Now, as we know, Donald Trump, and I don't know if people really, really know the scope of this, and I looked into it. He has been... So he's technically been going through 3 decades of litigation. He's been sued for, you know, thousands of times over 3 decades, which is insane in itself. The latest goings on, of course, he was indicted 4 times, one for mishandling classified documents, one for illegally trying to overturn the 2020 election, falsifying business records and hush money for, you know, the porn star and the Playboy lady person. So, you know, so those are like the have been 4 of the top things that he's has been in constant litigation for. And he's got numerous trials coming up. He's got one coming up. Let's see. No, September 23rd, but that's not right. He's got a couple in March. He's got one in May. And of course, the one that just completed with an $83 million win for E. Jean Carroll. And I want to share this and then we can discuss. Hang on.
You've talked about using some of Trump's money that you're about to get to help shore up women's rights. Do you know what that might be, what that might look like?
Yes, Rachel. Yes.
Tell me.
I had such great ideas for all the good I'm going to do with this money. First thing, Rachel, you and I are going to go shopping. We're going to get completely new wardrobes, new shoes, motorcycle for Crowley, new fishing rod for Robbie. Rachel, what do you want? Penthouse? It's yours, nothing. Rachel. Penthouse and France? You want France? You want to go fishing in France? No? Oh, all right. Okay.
That's a joke.
Although if me fishing in France could do something for women's rights, I would take the hit. You know, I would obviously take one for the team.
First of all, how disgusting, really. You know, as a woman, now I'm so grateful that I have never had to experience sexual assault or anything along those lines. So I am tremendously grateful. I know women who have. We all know somebody who has been affected by sexual assault. And I don't know a single one who has ever found such amusement and lightheartedness in something so traumatizing. So that this woman and these women are sitting there cackling and laughing and joking about what they're going to do with Trump's money, I think is such an obscene slap in the face to every woman, every person who has been affected by sexual assault. So that alone, I find them absolutely disgusting, and they should be ashamed of themselves. And I think it's a great example of what a joke and what a scam that entire trial was and what a witch hunt it was.
Yeah, so that was part two. So there, she got a $5 million settlement earlier in 2023. Mm-hmm. And then now another $83 million, bringing her up to a total of $88. Now this, the interesting thing about the ruling on this case or the settlement on this case is the jury awarded much, much more than what was asked for. I want to say it was another $30+ million mm-hmm. more than what was asked for. And this goes along the lines of it ruined her reputation, you know, pain and suffering, you know, kind of settlement. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, and again, I am in no way defending what President Trump was accused of doing. I'm not saying that that is okay. Right. I'm not saying that it's right.
Of course.
I'm not saying any of that. What I am saying is that this is not a criminal case. Mm-hmm. He has not been indicted. He has not been convicted of any kind of sexual assault, sexual battery of any kind. These are civil settlements based on accusations.
Right.
that it's important to note that. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not defending what he did if he did in fact do it. The reality is we don't know what he did in fact do because he's never been tried for the act itself.
Right.
Never. So that's one. The jury going above and beyond in this Manhattan, I think it was Manhattan courthouse.
Yes.
Above and beyond in the settlement is very indicative of the way New York City feels about President Trump. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Had this been tried in, you know, pick your blue, your red state, you know, if this had been tried in South Dakota.
Right.
Yeah. Probably not settling in her favor, but even if it did, certainly not tacking on 30 million plus above the requested amount.
Right. So it was something it was like three times the amount the legal team asked for and eight times her initial request.
Yeah. Insanity. So
it is,
you know, just sticking it to the president, you know, President Trump, which is nuts. Now you were talking about all the court cases that are pending. So there is one that we're waiting a decision on, and that was the civil fraud case in New York. So that one's actually, that trial's over with. That was the one where he, you know, President Trump jumped up and said something out of court in closing arguments, and then he stormed out. There's been no decision made yet on that case, but the case itself is done being tried. So they're waiting decision on that.
Okay.
There are two. You said two in March. That's what I'm tracking. That's a federal election tampering case and the Manhattan hush money case. Those are both supposed to start in March. Then in May is the classified documents trial. And then in August is the Georgia trial for the Georgia election results, you know, thing. So that's five more that are pending and will all come before November, of course.
Right.
So, you know, we've said this all along. How many of these is he going to get convicted of, or is he going to lose? Listen, even this one, E. Jean Carroll, both of her settlements of $5 million and $83 million are in appeals.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, she's never going to see it. She's never going to see it. It's never going to happen.
Set aside $5 million for the first settlement. That's already been put aside, made public record of it, but it's still under appeal. And this one is obviously going to be under appeal, $83 million.
Of course.
And every one of these, truthfully, will go under appeal and continue under appeal well beyond the election.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, there's no question about it. No question about it. It's just, you know, it's just wild. And his attorney that Alina Haba, she, you know, she's very, very vocal, very outspoken. She spoke after the judgment and made some, you know, some heavy accusations. There's actually accusations now of a conflict of interest between E. Jean Carroll's attorney and the judge. And so we're going to be hearing a lot about that, I think.
Hadn't heard that.
Yeah, just heard it today. I just saw it today, actually. And, you know, so, and there's many of those types of accusations going on. Letitia James, of course, there's a lot of questions there. So, you know, I mean, it's on her to come up with proof, you know, concrete proof to show that that's the case. And you know, but the sad thing is, based on what we've seen, and, you know, the absolute hatred for Trump that extends to the point where they don't care about the law. They don't care what's right and what's morally good and right and ethical. They don't care about those things. They just care about sticking it to him. So who is going to hear this? Like, who is going to hear this for them and rule in their favor? I mean, I just feel like it just seems like the odds are just so stacked against him because the judicial system is so heavily filled with left-leaning judges. And it's a I don't, well, I definitely don't envy him any of this. And his attorney's got her job ahead of her. I don't know what's going to happen with it.
Well, and I think it because of who he is, I think it is impossible to get an impartial jury for any of these court cases that require a jury. You know, this one, this last one, the E. Jean Carroll, the $83 million, that was a jury that decided that. Where in the world, one way or the other, red or blue, pro or con, you know, unless you go through and say, you know, are you Republican, are you a Democrat, and you put six and six on the jury, you know, there's no way and nowhere that he can get an unbiased trial. It's almost, I know people swear, you know, they're going to take the evidence and they're going to, you know, make an unbiased decision, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's, you don't say that and then tack on $30 million on top as an unbiased jury. Okay. Right. So there's, and you, he can't get an unbiased trial. I refuse to believe it. One direction or the other, pro or con, for or against, it's impossible for him to do that, which wrecks the principle of our judicial system.
Yeah, absolutely. It sure does. And, you know, and I think the, you know, the question begs to be asked for every American, for everyone watching this, that if they can do something like this to one of the wealthiest men in America, in the country, what can they do to you with nothing, you know, in comparison? It just, it's a little scary to see the type of power that's being wielded here. You know, one against a former president and a presidential candidate right now. I mean, this is, you know, this is a, these are political tactics. There is no question about the fact that this administration, the entire left, the Democrat Party, is, will do anything to eliminate him from becoming, you know, the president again. And this is being proved that there is no length that they won't go to. So, you know, does it says a lot of things and none of them are good, I think, for this country.
And at the same time, you know, he's got two election interference trials, the one in Georgia and then the federal one. Is anybody being tried for the Russian dossier and that level of election tampering? Because that's what that was. And we all know what that was.
Right.
That the FBI with the Hunter Biden laptop, affecting the election. Nobody, Hunter's under scrutiny, right? Hunter is.
Right.
But the FBI and the people involved with the hiding of that laptop and the, you know, oh, that's just Russian disinformation and blah, 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 blah. Everything that goes along with that. Nobody is being tried for either of those two things.
Right.
The Hunter laptop or the Russian dossier. Nobody.
Nope.
So it is corrupt. It is leaning one direction and it is leaning the direction of the party that's in power. And this is the weaponization of the Department of Justice that I talked about a year and a half, 2 years ago when they raided Mar-a-Lago looking for classified documents with blue and red lights and kicking doors in and all that other stupid stuff.
Yes. That's meanwhile, Biden's got classified documents in the back of his Corvette in his garage. But never mind that. Never mind that. Don't look at that. Who cares?
Yep.
That's different. That's different. Yeah. The double standard, the, you know, the blatant corruption. And it's so stunning. And honestly, Clay, I just feel so overwhelmed by it. And I feel that that is the general consensus for any spectator of all of this. Like, how do you do anything about this? Like, we're, our hands are tied. We can't do anything. Certainly, you know, we're just, we're spectators. We're watching this happen in real time. And the implications down the road are just huge. I mean, there already is so much distrust in all of our government systems right now. I don't really know how we can ever get back to a good place from this. I really don't.
Yeah, it has to be, no matter who wins this election, no matter the let's not even say who wins, whatever the outcome of this election is, it is, any kind of reconciliation is at least 4 years after that.
Right.
At least. And yeah. It's entirely possible that you are right, which is we may never come back. Mm. We may be too far down that road, which is sad, shameful, you know, turns my gut for the amount of years that I serve this nation that it has come to this, but this may be unrecoverable. It really might.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if we're looking at the finite, you know, sorry to be so dramatically doom and gloom, but, you know, I can't help but wonder if we are really looking at the fall of our nation, you know, as we know it. I mean, and I think the answer is pretty clear when we look around that, yes, that is at the very least the track that we're going down. I mean, that is definitely the path that we're on. I think it is very safe to say that, you know, right now we are the divided states of America, and it is, you know, it's heartbreaking and a little frightening, maybe even a lot frightening to watch. And for all the reasons you just said, you know, all the men and women who have fought so hard for this country and for all the freedoms that we have, and just everything that we have, to see it kind of disintegrating or imploding in front of our eyes is it's shocking is what it is. I certainly wouldn't have ever thought I'd be seeing this in my lifetime, or even certainly not talking about it.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll transition to our last topic, and it is a little bit lighter topic, but it is indicative of what we've been talking about. And our last topic for the night, again, a little bit lighter, is Taylor and Travis. Right. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce.
They are the lovebirds.
Right. There they are. Yeah. And listen, I'm not, and I know you're not, I'm not going to bash on the two of them. I'm so far away from that. It's not even funny. Listen, they're young compared to me and you. they're a young couple, and good for them for finding each other. Right. I'm sure it's not easy for famous people, especially potentially the most famous person in the world or pretty close. Right. You know, for her to find anybody that can live in that sphere that she lives in. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, they seem honestly, genuinely happy. So this is
I
not
think they look adorable together.
Yeah. And this is not, this is for everybody out there. This is not at all, you know, Elsa and I are on their side, right? We are not bashing Travis and Taylor.
No, we got to be careful, Clay, because those Swifties, I have found out very recently, they will come for you, man. They will come for you with their little kitty cat claws out. And I will explain that shortly. But let's keep talking about this for a minute, because we do have a good reason for why we're even talking about them.
So two things. One, you know, the biggest one for me is there's a lot of, you know, men out there, primarily men. I'm sure there's some women, too, that say, you know, Taylor Swift is ruining football. First things first. Get a grip on yourself, okay?
Yeah, it's football.
The NFL started going downhill a long time ago when they stopped actually hitting people, you know, when they stopped hitting quarterbacks and wide receivers, and it's not the same NFL. Okay, fine. She's on TV for max 120 seconds out of a three-hour game. She's not ruining football. She's not, okay? Your excuse of hating the Chiefs or whoever it is and Taylor Swift ruining football is ridiculous. And it's juvenile. And oh, by the way, your daughters are listening. So as you're bashing their idol, okay, and you're talking about her, they are listening to you. And what they're hearing you say is she's supporting her boyfriend, and she's out there, and she's out there doing it publicly, and she's doing it without shame, and she's loving with her whole heart. But she needs to do less of it because it's bothering my football game. That's what your daughters are hearing. So grow up, right? Yep. Be a better example for your kids, for your daughter. Yep. Stop being a juvenile, because Taylor Swift is not ruining football. Now, talk about your Swifties.
My Swifties. Oh, my goodness. So, let me show you this, everybody. If you haven't seen this already, this is wild. Okay. Now this has been talked about for the past couple few days here. Taylor Swift could sway the 2024 election outcome. A new poll finds with a fifth of voters likely to back the candidate endorsed by the singer. Now that's pretty wild. That's a big influence. And I am going to restate, because they're going to come for me no matter what. They're already coming for me. I will restate what Clay said. I have no problem with Taylor Swift. I think she's crazy talented. She is a tremendously gifted songwriter, singer, entertainer, all of those things. She's not my cup of tea. I do like some of her songs. I would not go to one of her concerts. One, I'm like 52, guys. I mean, what, you know, come on.
And you can't afford it.
I can't even, not on my best day. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So all of that being said, now with the graphic I just showed you, there's been some funny things going around. It's been said many times. All I did was echo it. It's not my own words. I'll just show it to you. Hang on. Here we go.
Are you ready for it?
If you're one of them, it might serve you well to remember that most of Taylor Swift's songs are about choosing the wrong guy.
Listen, it's funny. they got really mad that I did that. Now, I put that up. I put that up today, a few hours ago, a handful of hours ago. And at the last count, there was like 16,000 views on it and probably more at this point. And the comment section is a little fiery. It's a little bit mean, a little bit tacky. And I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. And I just have to say again, Swifties, I'm so sorry. So the reason I just... What are you doing in here?
You're going to read this right now.
You want me to read this?
That's right.
Is this written in crayon?
Read it right now.
How did you even get in here?
I have my ways. Hurry up.
All right, calm down. I'll read it. Seriously? I would like to apologize. You spelt it wrong. For the recent statements I made about Taylor Swift.
If you're one of them, it might serve you well to remember that most of Taylor Swift's songs are about choosing the wrong guy.
I was stupid a old. Stupid old...
I am
a stupid old woman who doesn't know anything about Taylor Swift. And I should just keep her name out of my dumb old lady mouth.
Yeah, that's right, you should. Keep going.
This part too. Okay. Everyone should listen to what Taylor Swift says and vote for whoever she says to vote for.
Yeah.
Are you even old enough to vote?
Like, whatever, who cares?
Are we done?
Read the last part.
Sincerely, spelled that wrong too. Sincerely, Elsa.
Ha ha, Swifties for life.
Can you go now?
Oh, yeah, sure.
How did you even get here?
Oh, my mom's waiting in the car.
Whatever.
Swifties. Oh, my mom wants to know if you validate parking.
No. That I made you so angry. I have no problem with Taylor Swift. I have a problem that people are choosing their future president based on who a pop singer likes or sides with. And let's face it, we've all been joking for several years now about how her songs are about her bad choices in men, her bad relationships. So it's just kind of, it was just funny. People, calm down.
So, you know, there is that graphic, the 1/5, I think it's somewhere in and around 18.5%, I think is the number I saw. So you have to assume that many of those are already Joe Biden voters. But
right.
we know that this is going to be a tight election, right? We know it is, or at least we have to anticipate that it will be. If mm-hmm. she sways 3% of the undecided, that's massive. I mean, that's huge numbers.
Yes.
And she did endorse President Biden in 2020.
Right.
You know, there's a historic picture of her with a big plate of cookies
or something. Yes.
Or muffins or something. Say Biden 2020 on them. She supported him. Yes. And listen, maybe a little bit conspiracy theory, but you know, she is on TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She's on the football games. The 120 seconds. It's enough. People are complaining. It's certainly enough that people are noticing. Okay.
Yes.
We all know that the bias that the mainstream media shows towards the current administration and specifically the president.
Mm-hmm.
Do the math, people, right? She's got 18.5% or almost 20% swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a tight race. She's on TV a lot. They're just, they're waiting. They're waiting for an endorsement from her to back the president or whoever, truthfully, the Democratic candidate is going to be, whether it's the president or not.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a linkage there. I don't think it's an accident. They're playing towards the Swifties. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're probably, most Swifties are probably not in the normal football audience, or they weren't until about 8 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And they probably aren't much in the mainstream media news audience, or they probably weren't until about 8 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I can tell you as a substitute teacher, all right, and that's what I do for those that don't know on the daily. I heard 2 sixth-grade girls just last week having a conversation. Oh, don't you think that Travis is going to be a great dad when him and Taylor have? And I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? But the 6th-grade girls, right? This is what they're thinking about. So if you think that the media, social media, mainstream media influence of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce isn't bleeding into the population through every platform and format, you're crazy.
Right.
Okay. Right. So when the endorsement drops, when she does endorse the president, that is also going to trickle down. Mm-hmm. Because just because the football season's over with doesn't mean people stop paying attention to her.
No, exactly. They'll be in the spotlight even more. They'll be on, you know, whatever their victory tour or their consolation tour. And it's going to, you know, it's just going to be this continuation of this soap opera that they're creating of these two people. Now, I guess one saving grace, I guess, could be that, you know, with any luck, the majority of her fan base is actually too young to vote. Yes. We can keep our fingers crossed. I know her fandom actually spreads, across probably several decades. There's some irony here, too, because in the midst of all of this, there is a story out right now that she, her stalker, I'm sure she has more than one, but this particular one is in the news quite a bit all of a sudden, because he is repeatedly breaking into her New York home. So I know she's got several homes. One happens to be in New York, and he has been breaking in practically daily, going through her trash, knocking on her door, you know, doing all of the things that a crazy stalker would do. He has been picked up by the police, I believe it's either 3 or 4 times now. And each time they bring him in and release him immediately. And each time he goes directly back to her place again and again. And with nothing, he's not being held on bail. Nothing is, they bring him in. They maybe give him a good talking to, shake their finger at him and say, don't do that. And he says, okay, I won't do it anymore. And then he beelines right back for her place. We all know some of these high profile cases of deranged stalkers actually killing the people that they're stalking. I mean, John Lennon, you know, is one right there. I mean, there's plenty, there's quite a few horrible stories. This girl is so high profile and she can't even get real protection from a stalker. And why is that? Because the administration that she loves so much and their governing rules doesn't lock up these people. They just set them free. So, you know, it's a little bit ironic to me that the very thing that you're supporting is what you are now becoming a victim of. And I hope that sinks into her head at some point. It probably won't, because she's so insulated. She maybe even hasn't even heard that her stalker's been to her place, you know, but you should know.
I hope. You ever seen Travis Kelce?
He's a big boy.
Small dude. He's a big boy.
Is a big, and sturdy boy.
If that stalker makes the mistake of breaking into her residence while they're there, let alone, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure she's got all kinds of armed security and all that other stuff, but maybe on the street, maybe he steps in the way, maybe mm-hmm. does whatever, and old Travis gets his mitts on him. I hope that he gets the same treatment as the stalker. I hope he pounds that guy into the ground.
Yes,
I really do. I hope he, you know, puts a hurting on him. And then I hope the police wag their finger at him and they let him go.
Yes.
That would be justice. But the reality is they won't.
Right.
The reality is that he will get arrested and mm-hmm. he will get charged. And then, unfortunately, that's the level of things that has to happen for people to change their minds. So maybe at that point, if that happens, you know, maybe a little bit of a stretch. But if that happens, then maybe that's the point where Taylor Swift and those, you know, surrounding her maybe change their mind a little bit on things, but I doubt it.
Right. Yeah. Same. And that is the consistent problem with the ivory tower crowd. They like everything to be a certain way that sounds lovely on paper, very utopian like. But when it comes to the reality of things that happen in the world, they are so sheltered and protected from it. And until they're not. And then that's when they change. And it's such a shame that it takes a tragedy or something horrific to happen for them to get it through their skulls. And I don't wish it on her by any means. I don't wish that on anyone by any means. I would love their utopia, their pretty little world that they live in. But yeah, so, you know, it sounded like it was going to be a fluff piece, guys, didn't it, on Taylor and Travis? You thought we were going to do all hearts and flowers and talk about how cute they are. Nah, bigger implications there.
There always are. It's never, always the are. World is, the world is far from simple and it's getting more complicated by the day.
It is. And thankfully, they have us to talk about it.
As we sit here deciphering all the goings on a week to week basis.
Yes. And we will continue to do so next week. I'm sure Texas will have more for us to talk about, as will Trump, as will Taylor and Travis, of course. You know, I mean, I must follow on this saga and make sure that they're okay and that their romance is thriving. This is very important to us. I know Clay will keep me filled in.
Listen, I'm going to stick to the news part. You can figure out the Travis and Taylor part.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. I like it. All right, guys, we will see you next week. We are excited always to hear from you and share your thoughts, share your comments, give us your ideas, just pour your hearts out to us. We love it. We love it. Clay, say goodbye to him.
Hey, listen, if you guys have something you want us to touch on, talk about, discuss, if you have a topic that's just nagging at you and you want to hear our opinions, let us know. You can find both of us on socials. We're not hard to find. And with that, I'll close it out. From me, as always, keep moving, keep shooting.
Take care, guys.